Get started with the call. This is Pete Pantuso with the American Bus Association. I want to thank you very much for taking time from your schedules to participate in the office with me. I've got a collection of staff. I won't run through everybody, but we're here to help you and assist you with anything you might need. But I'm going to turn the conversation over and the meeting over to our consultant, Rana Weber. Rana is well known in the school bus industry. Ran the National School Transportation Association and has just been a godsend to help us as we develop and expand and provide additional information to you all through the School Bus Council that we created earlier this year. So, Rana, I'll turn the meeting over to you.
Great. Thanks, Pete. And as Pete mentioned, I've been involved in the school bus industry for almost 30 years in one capacity or another. And most recently, I was the executive director of the National School Transportation Association. So I have a significant school transportation understanding, but particularly focused on contractors. So looking forward to working with you all and seeing how we can take this forward. Did you all want to do introductions? I don't know how your system records. So before we start, I wanted to check on that.
Yeah, we've got most everybody's names recorded here. We've got about a dozen folks online. It's probably easier just to move forward with the meeting.
Right.
Because people probably heard each other come in, especially if they were already on, and it's a little cumbersome to go back and get everybody to introduce themselves without talking over each other. So we'll let it go as is. But feel free. It's an open forum, so if you've got questions of Rana or any of us here as we go forward, let us know.
Yeah, completely agree. I think that makes the most sense. And I wanted to note, I heard Michelle Beckjord joined us. She's with the NTSB. Michelle, I hope I characterize everything correctly from the meeting and from the reports that have been issued, but obviously if at any point in time you want to add or feel the need to clarify, please feel free to jump in. And if anyone else has questions, by all means, please feel free to stop me as well. And so just to provide a little bit of understanding, NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, their purpose is to conduct investigations and make recommendations. They're objective and independent, but they do not have authority to regulate, so they're making recommendations to the agencies or to other entities that then implement those recommendations. And there are a couple of things of note before we start. School bus safety in particular, Chairman Sumwalt noted at the opening of Tuesday's board meeting, that statistically school buses are the safest form of transportation, but that the investigation focused on closing the gaps in that safety. And the other thing that I should note before we kind of get into more deeper findings and information is that the board debated, and staff, I assume, based on the conversation, whether to do one report or two. The accidents were fairly close together in time. They were about 3 weeks apart. So it made sense from a timing perspective, but there were also similarities between the two accidents. And the way it was discussed in the board meeting, they took the opportunity to combine the two into one special report to draw even greater attention to the findings and to hopefully achieve greater school bus safety and closing those gaps in safety. The findings overall focused on about six different things: school district lack of oversight by the school transportation providers, that was in both accidents; the poor management of unsafe school bus drivers by the motor carriers and the school districts, again in both accidents; a medically unfit school bus driver in Baltimore; commercial driver's license fraud in Maryland, that was in the Baltimore accident; large school bus occupant protection in Chattanooga; and then the electronic stability control, automatic emergency braking, and event data recorders, and that was also found from both accidents and some recommendations there. I'm going to walk you through quickly the accident sequence so you understand the accident, the findings, and then probable cause from each accident. Separate them and walk you all the way through Baltimore and then all the way through Chattanooga, and then we'll pull them back together and talk about recommendations combined. The recommendations were not separated by accident, but I figured it was a little easier to separate things out that way. And I recognize this is an incredibly busy time of year, so I'm going to go pretty quickly. Obviously, the final report is not out yet. That'll be a few more weeks or so to come. But this will give you at least a general understanding and basis of the situation. The Baltimore accident occurred on November 1, 2016, about 6:30 in the morning. The school bus was traveling east on Frederick Avenue in Baltimore, Maryland. That road is a one travel lane in each direction, eastbound and westbound, divided by a yellow central line. And as the road continued, the double yellow line transitioned into a center turn lane. And there were bike lanes on either side of the travel lane. The posted speed limit on that road at that point was 30 miles per hour. The school bus was occupied by a driver and an aide, and no children were on board. After traveling through an intersection, the school bus struck the rear of a 2012 Ford Mustang, which was traveling in the same direction. The Mustang then struck the curb and collided with a brick wall and a metal fence where it stopped. The school bus continued traveling east, crossed through the center turn lane, and entered the westbound lane and collided with the left side of a transit bus. The school bus impact ran along the left side of the transit bus, ending near the transit bus's rear axle, where both vehicles stopped. The transit bus was occupied by a driver and 13 passengers. The driver of both buses, the transit and the school bus, and four passengers on the transit bus were killed. Seven transit bus passengers were seriously injured. Two transit bus passengers, the aide on the school bus, and the driver of the Ford Mustang all received minor injuries. The posted speed, as I mentioned, was 30 miles per hour. The surveillance cameras in the area show the school bus driver was traveling approximately 57 miles per hour just before it striking the Mustang. The data from the Mustang vehicle shows that it was traveling at about 16 miles per hour. After colliding with the Mustang, the school bus continued for more than 800 feet and was traveling at about 45 miles per hour before striking the transit bus, which was traveling about 30 miles per hour. So there were some findings of significance in the Baltimore accident. There were several other findings, and you can certainly take your time to read those in the report, but the big ones that jumped out to me were the school bus driver was likely incapacitated by a seizure. He had a longstanding seizure disorder, but he had intentionally hid that. His employer was a contractor, AA Affordable Transportation, and it is believed that they were aware of his condition because he'd had a seizure in the office a few days before, 5 or 6 days before the accident occurred. And despite that, they allowed him to continue to operate the school bus. He had also fraudulently obtained his driver's license by providing documents with different name spellings or birth dates to circumvent the Maryland Motor Vehicle Authority verification system. And then the other finding of significance, the forward collision avoidance system with automatic emergency braking would have lessened the impact between the school bus and the Mustang, and it would have prevented the accident between the school bus and the transit bus. The probable cause, which was of great discussion during Tuesday's board meeting, and mainly to be sure that all the salient points were included, not that there was a difference of discussion of cause at all, but that there are three primary causes and contributing factor. The three causes were a loss of vehicle control due to the driver's incapacitation, thanks to the seizure. The bus driver's continued operation, despite his disqualifying medical condition and his fraudulently obtained commercial driver's license, and the failure of the contractor, his employer, AA Affordable Transportation, and the Baltimore City Public Schools to provide adequate bus driver oversight following the medically unfit driver to provide a commercial vehicle with a medical condition that they knew or should have known. The contributing factor to the severity was the lack of the collision avoidance system with the automatic, which would have, again, mitigated the accident. Any questions on Baltimore before I transition to Chattanooga? Okay. The Chattanooga accident occurred about 3 weeks later, November 21st. It was at 3:20 p.m. in the afternoon. The school bus was occupied by a driver and 37 students, which were riding home from Woodmore Elementary School. The bus was traveling southbound on Tally Road, which is a two-lane roadway with a double yellow line dividing the lanes. This section of the road had a horizontal curve to the left and then a horizontal curve to the right. The speed on the first curve was 25 miles per hour, and then the second curve is a 30 mile per hour curve. The driver was traveling at 52 miles per hour as he entered the first curve. The school bus struck a mailbox to the left, where the bus departed the roadway and collided with a utility pole. Following the collision with the utility pole, the bus overturned on its right side and subsequently collided with a tree, causing the roof of the bus to collapse inward. Six passengers died and 31 were injured. The bus driver received minor injuries. The findings from the Chattanooga accident: the bus entered the first curve at 52 miles per hour, which would have been operating at close to the limits of the vehicle's cornering ability. The driver had previously used speed and sudden stopping as a mechanism to control student behavior. This had been reported, but it had been unaddressed. Hamilton County Department of Education, which was the county, failed to follow up these reports to determine the outcome of the driver-related complaints and the removal of an unsafe driver. Durham School Services, who is a contractor who employed the driver, lacked a systematic and detailed process to manage the complaints. Now, it was noted during the board meeting on Tuesday that Durham has since implemented a system in Chattanooga to do this and is rolling such a system out nationwide. Compartmentalization was rendered ineffective in the accident because the children were thrown from their seating compartments at the various impact points, with striking the mailbox to the right and the utility pole to the left, and then subsequently the tree. And again, had the vehicle been equipped with electronic stability control system, it would have assisted the driver in maintaining control and mitigating severity. The probable cause of this accident, again, is three primary reasons and one contributing factor. First being the driver's excessive speed, and it was also determined in the course of the investigation, and while this isn't really discussed much in the executive summary that was released, it was discussed more in the board meeting, it was determined that the driver took a cell phone call just prior to the accident, which ended just after the accident. Obviously led to loss of vehicle control. They discussed it during the meeting and during the board meeting, and while it didn't seem definitive, they could find no proof that the call was taken in a hands-free manner. The second probable cause was that Durham School Services failed to provide adequate bus driver oversight. They allowed an inexperienced driver to operate the bus, and he had escalating risky behavior during that time, and it's believed that either Durham knew or should have known. The Hamilton County Department of Education's lack of follow-up to ensure that a safe driver was operating the route. And then the contributing factor in this case focused more on passenger lap shoulder belts on the school bus. Had the bus been equipped, you wouldn't have relied solely on compartmentalization to keep the children in their seats. Now, the recommendations, as I mentioned previously, address both accidents, and they were not separated out by accident at all. There were 16 new recommendations, which is a significant amount, and they recognized four previous recommendations. I'm just going to highlight some of the ones that really more are ones that you should be aware of. You should take the time to read all of them, but the ones of greatest significance to a contractor in particular. There's the recommendation to NHTSA, to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, to require all new school buses be equipped with collision avoidance systems and automatic emergency braking technologies. There was also a recommendation to the manufacturers to include Bluebird, Collins, IC, Starcraft, Thomas, Transtech, and Vancon to install systems as standard equipment on all newly manufactured buses. There were a couple of recommendations with regards to seat belts. As you know, some states have lap belts, some states have lap shoulder belts. It's kind of a patchwork. So specifically to Florida, Louisiana, New Jersey, and New York, to amend their seat belt requirements to no longer allow lap belts and to move them towards lap shoulder belts. To the states without seatbelt requirements, the recommendation is to enact legislation requiring all new large school buses be equipped with passenger lap shoulder belts for all seating positions. IC Bus, which was involved, there was an IC Bus was in the Baltimore accident. They received a recommendation to develop and implement engine recording features for the event data recorder and the engine control module for newly manufactured buses. And then there were numerous recommendations to address the concerns of the Baltimore driver, to include those who knew about the health issues, to be sure that all who need to know about the health issues are in aware, and then also to address the license fraud loophole. Any questions about the recommendations or the Baltimore accident? Okay. Like I said, the final report should be out in a few weeks, and I would highly encourage you to find some time to read it. Michelle, did you want to add anything? And I thank you for taking the time to join us.
Sure. I think one of the things that we didn't get a chance to talk about a little bit was that the NTSB did have data from the driver's cell phone in Chattanooga that actually showed when he did use a Bluetooth. And one of the things that we probably should have brought up a little bit more clearly was that he did not use Bluetooth on the day of the crash. And I think one of the things that that would have highlighted was if he wasn't using a Bluetooth, he must have either had a different type of hands-free, but also in listening to the video, the inboard video, the bus, you know, as you know, with all the school kids, was so loud, there's almost no way that he could have been talking on a cell phone during that type of maneuver. So talking on a cell phone on a hands-free device like speakerphone. So we're pretty confident that he was, in fact, using his hands to hold the phone while he was driving. And so that's one of the things that didn't come out as clearly as we had hoped. But I think you covered everything, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions that anybody might have about our conclusions or our recommendations or even something that was within the investigation that wasn't a conclusion itself. I'm happy to talk about either one of those.
Does anyone have any questions for Michelle? Okay. Thanks, Michelle. I appreciate that. I would agree. I didn't think it was very clear in following the board meeting, so that's helpful information. I'm going to move on into the EPA rollback of the greenhouse gas emissions. So if you only joined for the NTSB portion, feel free to drop off. You won't hurt my feelings at all. But I want to be respectful of your time. I know with end of year of schools, it's an incredibly busy time. So I want to get you back to your operations as quickly as possible. The EPA rollback, this is really just because I'm sure you've heard of a couple of things going on with this, and just to kind of clear up any confusion and give you a little information while we have you. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt recently announced the intent to repeal the Obama-era standards on vehicle emissions. You'll recall this from the Obama administration time when they changed the vehicle emission standards. The current standards are set to start with the 2022 to 2025 model year and includes greater enhanced fuel efficiency for cars and trucks. In order to do that, the Environmental Protection Agency will need to go through a formal rulemaking process to revise those standards, and that would include a public notice and open comment period. On May 1st of this year, 17 states and the District of Columbia filed suit against the EPA, asking the court to block their attempted rollback, and that suit's being led by the state of California. The Volkswagen settlement, every state has now been certified, and many states have now released their draft or their final versions of their plans, with all plans being out no later than this. It this is something you are not engaged in, I highly encourage you to take a look at it for your state in particular. All states are different, so it's important to understand what's going on in your state. School bus replacement is an option in the funding, and this comes from the VW emissions case a few years ago, where VW was fined a significant amount of money in the billions of dollars, and they've set up some trusts. Each state, there is going to be funding available, and it's up to you to go after the funding should you so choose. In most states, school bus replacement is eligible for that funding. Funding varies by state, but in general, the spring was focused on intelligence gathering, and the summer will turn to RFPs and funding opportunities. There's a lot of information out there. There are a few clearinghouses to go to just for your ease. One of them, which is led by the National Association of Clean Air Agencies and the National Association of State Energy Officials, is an easy website to remember. It's vwclearinghouse.org, and you can go and check on your state and try to get a little bit more engaged. I highly encourage you to talk to local associations, governmental agencies, clean cities, anybody like that, to get involved in the process and seek some of the funding if that's of interest to you. The DERA grant, we know we've sent out a couple of emails about this, but I also wanted to take this opportunity to remind you of this. The Environmental Protection Agency, a DERA grant, the Diesel Emission Reduction Act, and this is for also for school bus retrofit and replacement projects. EPA is awarding a total of up to $40 million spread out over its 9 regions. And funding amounts will vary per region, as will the matching amounts for a project. But EPA is expected to award between 2 and 8 projects per region. The applications are due June. It's an incredibly difficult time from a school bus perspective and school operating perspective, but it's a great opportunity to seek funding to enhance your fleet. The EPA will inform those that are awarded grants in July, and the project period is from October 1 of this year to December 31st of 2020. If you're interested in applying through ABA, we've set the firm deadline which we've extended once, to close a business tomorrow. So feel free to reach out to ABA if that's of interest. We've got a lot of information to gather in order to get your application in, but we're ready and willing to help you. And Pete, that's all I have, trying to be as quickly as possible here. So I'll turn it back over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Rana. Anybody have any questions of Rana and anything that she's gone through? And again, on the last item on the agenda, the DERA grants, the time window is very, very short. But if you're interested and you can get the information together quick enough, Rana will help you put the application together. Beyond that, I've also got with me Brandon Buchanan, who does our Bus Industry Safety Council. BISC has got a meeting coming up in June in Baltimore, in the Baltimore area, at BWI Airport. So if that's